Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts on Recovery, broadcasting to you today from the 10th floor of the We Believe Tower in Midtown Atlanta, overlooking the majestic Buckhead skyline, where our program today is being sponsored by Royal Pudding. Rich, rich, rich in flavor, smooth, smooth, smooth as silk, with more food energy than whole, fresh milk, Royal Pudding. Actually, folks, that's not true, but I just was thinking about my mother, and she used to give us Royal Pudding all the time, so I just put that in there for no good reason whatsoever. At any rate, we've got Stacy and Pam on the line, and we want to continue with Pam's story from last week. Pam, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Wonderful. I was hoping for some Royal Pudding, and my mother used to make that instead of Jell-O. I don't even know if they make Royal Pudding anymore. But at any rate, you know, things just pop up, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, Royal Pudding was good. I'm not sure they have it anymore. I think somebody else owns it now.
I suspect they do. All right, we were talking last week, and you had mentioned that you were married when you were 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you got married in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, in East Tennessee, you know, that's fairly standard, but in Illinois and Iowa, that's a bit on the young side. And
yeah, you can get married at 14 there. You could. I doubt you can anymore.
15 years old.
Mm-hmm. Must have been some kind of farm thing going on.
Pretty amazing. Kids grow up in some ways much later than they used to because they don't have the responsibilities. Fully one-third after they graduate college continue to live with their parents.
Right.
And, you know, that just isn't something that earlier generations would even consider doing when it was they were 18 or 19 at the latest. They were out on their own.
Right.
So, at any rate, you know, you had children young, and you were, you know, just bouncing around with numerous different guys, and then all of a sudden it came to a crashing halt because of what?
Oh, I thought you were going to answer that. You wanted me to answer that. Well, I'm not sure it came to a crashing halt. I think I got pregnant and married and pregnant and had a baby and got divorced and kept on my wild ride because it's all I knew how to do.
It did stop at some point.
It did stop at some point, yeah. So I had three more children, and during my last divorce, I became a Christian. And that's kind of when things kind of started altering for me.
So you have a total of four children.
Yep, I got three boys and one girl.
Okay, and the oldest child is a boy or girl?
Yes, boy.
Boy, okay. And he is by one father and the other three are by another one, or are there more?
Yeah.
It was, I mean, I remember this woman here in Atlanta that went to the hospital, and she had five sons. Mm. And, you know, they asked her, they said, you know, what are their names? And she said, they were all named Antoine. And the nurse looked at her and said, how can you tell them apart? And she just looked, she said, well, let's call them by their last name.
Oh, that's funny. So last week you asked me if I would figure out how I reconciled things with my children.
Mm-hmm.
So is that what you wanted to know about?
That's the key to everything, as far as I'm concerned, because you know you replicate a pattern, and then all of a sudden you've got to break it. Somebody's got to break it, and you know that's the part that is kind of the linchpin, if you ask me.
It is, and there was nobody certainly in my whole lineage that was breaking anything, except passing stuff on. And when I became a Christian, I found out very early that you could break family curses, you could stop behavior, it was all a whole new revelation to me that I had never even heard before. So I started really studying that and trying to figure out, okay, how do you do this? This is other than the fact that I, stopped drinking and stopped running and stopped carousing and stopped smoking and staying home. What else do you do? Because by now, the kids were old enough, they had all developed their own rebellion. My two oldest sons were already doing drugs and drinking, so there was a lot of bad patterns already formed in them, so it wasn't fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, how could they not be?
Yeah,
I mean,
well, they did.
So obvious that's the direction that they would choose. I remember, my father died of emphysema. Mm-hmm. And he smoked 2 packs of Camels a day.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, he got up to 4 packs.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started smoking at 12, my parents were upset, and they criticized me for it. You can't do this, and you can't do that.
But they wouldn't stop smoking,
would they? That was what I was taught. So, it's always do as I say and not as I do.
Right. That doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
And I knew if I was going to have any kind of say that I had to be the first one to stop all that behavior. So I did stop it, and they kind of looked at me like I had lost my mind, like, oh, what happened to you? You're not half as much fun, and I learned to say no, which wasn't easy. And I spent a lot of time with God and allowing Him to show me how much damage I had done to them. That was like the first process. I looked and I said, "Wow, how could have I done this to my own children?" I just passed it on. It was really hard to really look at how bad of a parent I had really been.
Of course, you didn't know you were doing it to them.
No, I didn't. I had no clue. I really didn't know I was a bad parent.
I think that happens so often, and particularly when people get divorced, they use their children as weapons to hurt the other without really even coming to a smidgen of a grasp of exactly how bad an idea that is and how destructive it is to
God gave me a great word picture in my head about what happened in that divorce. And it's like having a car accident and a semi comes along and smacks the car and wrecks it completely, and all the kids go flying everywhere, and broken legs, broken arms, broken limbs, everybody's broken and bruised, and you get back up and I thought, wow, so how do I handle all that? How do I make this okay? How do I become a parent that they can trust? How do I become a parent that they can respect when they had no respect for me? They didn't trust me. And by now they wanted to do what they wanted to do. They didn't want to behave. They were used to no rules and no limits, and they could do what they want because I was too drunk and too high and too not there to care. So God took me on a little journey showing me how bad the damage really truly was that I had done to my children. And so I spent a lot of time allowing Him and revealing to me the level of disappointment in so many ways that I had damaged them and I had harmed them. And then came the hard part. After you think the hard part is seeing how bad you really are. But then I had to start humbling myself and going to them and asking them for forgiveness and not making excuses for my bad behavior, my bad choices, what I had done, not blaming anybody else, but just taking all the blame. And I'll never forget one time I was driving my one son to a basketball game, and it was in the middle of a horrible rainstorm, and I hated driving in the rain. And I complained and bitched all the way over to the school. And we get there, and I look at him. He just looks kind of like, ugh. And all of a sudden, like, God just kind of poked me, like, what did you just do to him? And for the first time in my life, I said, I can't believe I just did that to you. I just sounded like I didn't want to drive you over here, and I'm scared of driving in the rain, but I'm so sorry. I made you feel like you weren't worth me taking the time and getting in the car and driving you over here. And his whole face lit up, and he smiled, and he said, oh, that's okay, Mom. And I had to do that over and over millions of times. I mean, it was just ongoing. And I still probably have to do that. And God found all new ways for me to take responsibility for the depth of my ex-husband's and my bad parenting skills, because he continued doing what he was doing. And so it was not a fun thing to do. I had to love them. One thing God taught me is to love them where they're at, not where I wanted them to be. And for my oldest son, that meant that I had to love and support my oldest son through 8 years in a Mexican prison. That was a lot of fun.
Well, you understand what's happening with that Marine then right now in spades, don't you?
Yes, I do. And it's so much more worse than any American could ever grasp the reality of. Not fun.
Why don't you just take a minute and everybody, this is a huge deal. I mean, Obama went and he got a deserter, gave up, you know, five mass murderers for a deserter that they're now championing. And this poor Marine got lost and now he's in jail and Obama doesn't care, not two legs. Mm-hmm. What's happening mm-hmm. with this guy down there in Mexico?
Well, the Mexican prisons are all full of drugs, so he's probably doing drugs. You can get all the drugs you want down there. You can't get decent food. You have to buy food if you're going to get it. So he's probably living on slop. And my son was one of two Americans in the prison. And he learned to speak Spanish fluently, of course. And he's a survivor. You know, I taught him how to survive, so he survived. But it's filthy, it's dirty, and they don't like Americans unless you have money in your hand. So it's not a pretty sight, just not a pretty sight. So that boy needs a lot of prayer, whether he's innocent or whether he's guilty. And that's what God clearly showed me. He said, I don't care, you know, and he was guilty, you know. He said, I don't care if he's innocent or he's guilty. You need to go show him what love looks like because he doesn't have a clue. I had to go down there for 8 years, and I had to take him food, clothes. I had to buy him a cell if he wanted to lock on his door. You locked your doors from the inside, Mexico. You put your lock on the inside. And he would take all my clothes and sell them for drugs. And I had to go back down. I went down probably four times a year and would buy him another cell because he'd sell it. I'd go down there, and he'd have a pair of shorts on and bare shoes, and he'd sold everything in the cell. And God said, you keep on doing that because he needs to know you love him. He doesn't know that right now. And I kept on doing it until one day God said, okay, time's up. So I gathered all the drug dealers together in a room, hired myself an interpreter because I didn't trust my son. And I said, okay, sit down here. And you're going to have to kill him because I'm not going to pay you anymore. And they all looked at me, oh, no, no, no. I said, yes. I said, why should I pay to kill him when you might, if you're going to kill him, just go ahead and kill him because you're killing him. Look at him. You know, he's like 6'4", and he weighed like 60 pounds. I said, you're killing him. Why should I pay you to kill him? Go ahead and just kill him anyway. And they made a deal with me. Then I said, if you don't, I'll pay what he owes as long as you don't sell him another drug. And they all signed a piece of paper, and the American Embassy couldn't believe the people who signed that piece of paper for me. So that's where he's at.
That's an interesting story.
Oh, I got 8 years of stories.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Unbelievable.
I got 8 years of stories about Mexican prisons.
Jeez. Well, I don't want to just stay in Mexico with prisons. It's interesting, though, and particularly given that we have our Marine down there that's unfairly. But, you know, continue back to restitution and reconciliation with your kids.
Well, that's what I had to do for the oldest one, was 8 years of restitution and reconciliation by going there, and he sold everything I'd bring him, and I'd go back again. God told me to love him where he was at, not love him where I wanted him to be. Today, he's where I want him to be. But it took 8 years, and he had a full-blown drug thing, so it was like loving him and not throwing him away just because he was bad, because I taught him how to be really bad. And so I couldn't throw him away. The other three, each one of them took did things that you sure wish they hadn't. I had to love them where they were at and stand by their side. What I didn't do when they were younger, I had to do when they were adults. And I had to continue to love them and not and forgive them, and because as they forgave me for me causing them to walk in the rebellion they were walking in, so I had to forgive them as they walked out the rebellion that I had taught them to do. And it wasn't easy.
Now, of the four, how many are believers?
All four.
For sure?
Yes. Are they all walking like I do? No. No.
Okay. Of the four, how many of them are walking with the Lord?
My daughter is just gung-ho. And my son that was in the Mexican prison is the next one that walks with them. And then my son that is not married probably is the farthest away. But he was saved, water baptized. They were all water baptized together. And went to church, and things happened, and old behavior came back.
Oh, I'm clear. I understand that completely. And the father of the oldest, what happened? Where is he? And is he in his son's life at all?
Well, he's really not in any of their lives much. You know,
the first child
The first one. He's not in contact at all. He got married to somebody else, and he really didn't want to know anything about that child. We were married and divorced, and my son went to find him, and it wasn't good. And then the one that I married, he was like an absentee father. He was an absentee father when I was married to him. So when I was divorced, he was even worse. So, in essence, he just wasn't there. So they didn't know any kind of stability, or it was just strained.
Okay, that's the one father. That's for your oldest son.
The other father.
It's one and three, am I correct?
The other father wasn't a father even when I lived with him. He was like an absentee father. And when we were divorced, he was even more absentee. So he was like they didn't have, none of them had a father, because they were just all kind of bailed. The oldest one's father had remarried and didn't want anything to do with it. The second one was too busy drinking when I was married to him. He wasn't home, let alone after I divorced him.
And how long have you been divorced from him?
15 years.
Is he still drinking?
Let me see. He had a liver transplant and stopped for about a year. And then he started again. I don't think he drinks quite as much now because he's really sick.
Well, you know, they for a long time, they wouldn't let alcoholics have liver transplants.
Well, they let him have one.
Did he have to demonstrate sobriety for a year before they would do it?
No.
Does he, in his work, does he work for the federal government or state government?
No. No, he doesn't.
That's kind of unusual. Sometimes people that are governmental workers are able to get by in the system. But by and large, drinkers don't get livers. There are too many people that need them that are sick that aren't alcoholics.
Isn't that amazing?
You know, well, they brought it on themselves. Is the whole deal. And I have a niece who, my older brother's oldest daughter, and he had her very young, so she's really closer to my age. But she was an alcoholic and a bull dyke prison guard, and was able to get a liver transplant and liver and kidneys, and because of the union that she worked for, and yet even though she's had that, she is very sick, just like him, and she goes back to the alcohol because it helps her numb her pain, and even though it's going to kill her. She can't stop. What happens with so many of these people is that they get a wet brain. There are parts of them that are no longer the same, and they can't really think and reason like they once did. And, it's very sad stuff. So this guy's very sick, and he's not in their lives at all.
No. Well, they go out to dinner once a year or twice a year maybe or something, but, not functioning or not, on a relationship level, because he didn't think he had to go back and undo anything. He didn't think he did anything wrong.
They never do.
No, he doesn't think he did anything wrong. So... So it's been a training season trying to get them to forgive their father and let go, because it doesn't do any good to hold on to it, and pick up the pieces and become your own man. One time my ex-husband tried to talk my one son into he'd got caught with a open bottle of beer. It's at the school, at the college he went to, and that was like a big, huge offense. And so he came and he talked to him, and he told him how he'd lost everything he loved because he drank. He lost me, and he lost the kids in his home. And he said, it's so painful. I drink because I was in pain, and it's so painful, and I just couldn't stop. So you need to stop, and went on about him stopping when he was done. And he leaves, and my son looks at me and says, so he's got a big dagger sticking out of his leg, keeps on bumping into the wall, shoving it in deeper, and I'm supposed to listen to him? Why would I stop drinking if he told me to? But he thought that those examples that he gave, because I was in so much pain, and if I had it all do over again, if he had it all over, he'd do the same thing, because he still was doing the same thing. And so,
well, they become so resentful and bitter, and they use it to to camouflage that pain, and it does.
That's right.
A little bit, and for a while it works, and then the alcohol becomes a greater problem than the original one, and you haven't solved it either. So you've got two. And then health
really
issues come from it.
It really destroys relationships.
The relationships and being obnoxious and making a rear end out of yourself when you're drunk, so you lose all the friends. And, I mean, just it's just a one continuous spiral down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And it's spiraled down for him, and, you know, he's got no relationship with his kids. None whatsoever.
How do they feel about that? That's got to be a huge loss for them.
Well, it is. You know, I've spent a lot of time working with them and trying to help them to love the good things about him. And the same way that God taught me that I had to love my children where they were, not where I wanted them to be.
What are the good things about him?
He's got a very kind heart. There's a lot of good things about him. He's really very kind-hearted. He's really very giving. In he would help somebody do anything. But he doesn't know how to maintain relationships. So don't ask him to do that because that's not going to happen. He can't maintain relationships. But he would if you needed help. If I needed anything, I'd call him and he'd go get it done because that's who he is. Fiercely protective, fiercely caring as much as he can. As long as you don't require of him to draw on emotional support that he can't give.
Okay. All right.
He's
so
really
now, so
smart.
Said...
He's a very honest businessman. There's lots and lots of really good things about him.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you've been divorced for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you look at men differently now?
Differently than before I married him?
Well, I mean, obviously you had a problem with your picker. You were picking,
I did.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I get it.
I don't anymore. I'm a fruit inspector now.
You're a what?
A fruit inspector.
Okay.
That means I stand back and watch somebody's character. If I don't like your character, you're not getting through my front door. That's all I look
like
at.
Like that. I am now a fruit inspector.
A fruit inspector is like the fruits of the spirit.
Oh, no, I knew exactly what you meant. Of course, the fruits of the spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience.
Yep.
Kindness,
so I'm a fruit inspector those fruits should display character in somebody. And if they don't, run. If they're lying about somebody else or telling stories about somebody else, they're going to do the same thing to me.
Well, that makes sense.
If they badmouth their girlfriends and their wives and whatever females were in their life, their mothers, they're going to do the same thing to me. My ex-husband and I are really good friends. I don't want to be with him, but we're good friends. And if he got really sick and had nobody to take care of him, I'd go take care of him.
You know, that's a good thing because that's a measure of reconciliation, you know, that will ultimately help your children.
Well, I think it has.
This has been a really, really interesting time, and we've gone all over the place, but I like to do that. And, let me say thank you, Pam, and thank you, Stacy, for, for doing this. And we are definitely out of time, so I've got to run. So let me just say this. Thank you so much for sharing your life and your story, and God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.